There's a lot of things in this old world that just do not make sense. Like why there's so few believers on the firing line, while so many others sit the fence. But if you want to know where the Word of God stands, and believe it wants to use your feet and hands, it's time to take your faith out of the seats and into the streets, and come along with me. If you'll only look, then you will see on WCN TV.
Well, welcome back to WCN TV. It's Tuesday, June 23rd, 2026. It's my son's birthday. He's 34 years old. Can you believe that? I started this work when I was 34, and here I am. No, he's 34. Anyway, I want to thank you all for tuning in today. We really appreciate you taking the time to be informed and to participate with us on the program. And speaking of that, you can be part of the program if you're watching live at WCNTV.net. You just click that little button that says join the studio audience, and then you can make comments, ask questions, and participate in our discussion. I know that most of you will be watching later, and a lot of you prefer to watch on Rumble. So if that's the case, you can still do us a favor and like, follow, and share this program with others. But more importantly, you know, 99% of our viewers on Rumble watch every week, but they never hit that follow button. So again, please just hit the button. It really does help us out. Well, today we are blessed to have John Guandolo with us as our guest. I'm sure many of you already know about his work, but just as a short introduction, John is a former FBI and national security consultant and expert. He's a combat vet, Marine officer. He's been a SWAT team member, and he's an author, speaker, teacher, and even a songwriter. In his current work, he helps identify and dismantle domestic and foreign threats in local communities. His books include Sharia, The Threat to America, Raising a Jihadi Generation, and Islam's Deception, The Truth About Sharia. John, thank you for being with us and being so patient with my introduction here. I have more introduction after you say hello to the folks.
So, well, it's good to be on with you, and thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Well, you know, I tried to find a list of Islamic terror attacks and threats here in America by searching the internet. And as hard as I tried, I only got articles about how Muslims are so oppressed and attacked, and the problem of Islamophobia in America. Even AI tried to hide the truth. But then I pressed it about certain known events, like the attacks on a Michigan synagogue and Old Dominion University in Virginia. Those things just happened 3 months ago. And finally, AI admitted that those attacks did actually happen, and they were carried out by Muslims. But it seems that now even artificial intelligence is covering for jihadi Muslims, still insisting that Islam is a religion of peace. We've all seen videos of imams urging their good Muslim followers to wage war against us infidels, and especially since the war with Iran began. And yet we're instructed to not believe what these so-called religious leaders are telling their people here in America. So why don't we start by having you tell us what the current situation is regarding the global and U.S. Islamic movements, and especially in light of our ongoing situation in Iran.
Okay, so that's a big place to start, but I will be concise and then let you ask questions if you think I should go deeper on a particular piece of the answer.
Sounds good. So
for your viewers, there actually is a global Islamic movement. And I didn't come up with that term. Our adversaries did. the members of the global Islamic movement, call it that. And those members include the military jihadi groups like Al-Qaeda, Islamic State, Hezbollah, Hamas, Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, etc. Lashkar-e-Taiba, I mean, we could go on, Islamic Jihad. And it includes the Islamic movements, capital M, like Muslim Brotherhood is the leading one, Tablighi Jamaat, Jamaat-e Islami, the Diobandis. There are others. And then it includes all of the Islamic states, nations, nation states on earth. There are 56 Islamic nations on earth, and they all are members of something called the OIC, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. It's a 57-member organization, the 56 Islamic nations, plus something they call the State of Palestine. And we can come back to this, but they have all officially said that they view relations between Muslim nations and non-Muslim nations only through the lens of Sharia, which means non-Muslims must convert or be killed unless you're Christian, Jew, or Zoroastrian. And then you can convert to Islam or submit to Islamic law and pay the non-Muslim poll tax or be killed. So those are the main components of the Islamic movement. And within those, there are other pieces like the there are all kinds of support mechanisms, including how they finance the global movement. And the global Islamic movement, when you evaluate it, 100% of its members say that their objective is to wage war against non-Muslims to establish an Islamic state on earth under Sharia, which is interesting because that's what 9- and 10-year-old Muslim children are taught in U.S. Islamic schools and Islamic schools in Canada and Africa and in the Middle East and in Asia. So, and I've, if someone wants to say, well, how in the world do you know that? Because I've read the textbooks that are used in those continents. Sadly, it's what I've been doing for 25 years. But that's the Islamic movement. That's who they are and what they're doing. When it comes to the United States, what I think Americans need to understand is we are in a war being waged by hostile foreign powers like Iran, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, Pakistan, UAE, Egypt, and others. And they're using the massive Islamic network in the United States, made up of thousands of organizations, to wage that war. And so when you understand that, and you understand that the primary way they're waging the war is not through violence, but by espionage, counterintelligence, subversion of our major cultural and societal pillars, propaganda, psychological warfare, economic warfare, then when you see that for the last 30 years, our government at the state and federal level is focused only on violence, it's why we're losing the war. We're not even engaging the enemy where they're primarily engaging us. So that's the shortest kind of snippet I can give you on the overall war. And I'll just say a couple things about our interactions with Iran. When you deal with, whether it's fight with or engage with an Islamic nation or an organization or an entity, if you don't understand Sharia and you don't understand their defeat mechanism per Sharia, then you will likely not defeat them. Because if anyone in the White House, just one person that had any pull with the president, understood Sharia, which they do not, except the bad guys working in the White House. They certainly understand it, but they're not trying to help us. If someone did, they would say, well, Mr. President, in that case, we should keep obliterating Iran until there's not much left. And that's exactly what we should do, because that's what Sharia requires for them to stop fighting. Just like after 9/11, if we had leveled Mecca and Medina and we had gone after Iran, both of which nations were involved, as was Pakistan, and we had really destroyed much of Pakistan's military infrastructure and destroyed their intelligence headquarters and things like that, we might have stopped the war in 30 days. But because neither Mr. Bush or any of his cabinet understood that, here we are today. This is the consequence of deciding you don't need to know your enemy to win a war, is you lose the wars, which we did in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and elsewhere. How's that for okay.
Well, yeah, and we're going to get more into Iran here too, hopefully. But in this country, we've seen major cities like Minneapolis and Detroit bending over backwards to accommodate the demands of the Islamic communities, while natural-born American citizens have become second-class residents in the very cities where they were born and raised. Meanwhile, Sharia is advancing, and you know, we've seen the rape gangs in the UK and other European countries. We've seen people arrested and sent to prison because they express concern about Islamic hordes overtaking their communities. Is Sharia taking ground in America as well?
Oh, of course. I would say they're winning. And I would go farther and say they're, from their perspective, from the U.S. Islamic movement's perspective, they're on the downslope. They're just running the clock out. And, you know, they view it as it's pretty much game over. They know they've got some battles to fight, but all they see on the American home front is surrender. And I want to make a couple points. When you mention places like Dearborn, Minneapolis, I would go farther and say communities like Charlotte and Nashville and Phoenix and Los Angeles and New York and Boston that have totally surrendered. They haven't just surrendered to the Islamic movement. I mean, the Islamic movement runs its train on the tracks that were laid decades before by the communists in the United States. And it's not accidental, it's intentional. The communists in these areas that have spent years developing their networks and their influence in places like, again, Minneapolis, they ushered in the jihadis, just like the communists of the Biden administration ushered in millions of, you know, military-age Chinese males and jihadis from countries all over the world. It's a disaster. It is a powder keg waiting to happen. But you can't look at this without talking about the communist movement, because they are the ones who provided the tracks and the support network for the jihadis. So it's not like, oh, these dumb politicians just don't understand Islam. The communists know exactly what they're doing. Now, this is the intentional outcome of a 100 plus year communist movement in the United States and a 60 plus year Islamic movement in the United States. And really since the 1990s, but in earnest, prior to 2010, they've been working together very closely. And now at the local level across America, the communists and the jihadis operate seamlessly at the local level.
Do you think that the Democratic Party is basically communist?
Yes. And I don't think that's just an opinion. I mean, a couple things I'd throw out there. The Democrat Party at the national level and in some cases at the state and local level, it is the leading edge of the U.S. communist movement. They're the ones coordinating these efforts.
Yeah.
When I hear people say, why are the Democrats? I mean, you look, I think last count, we had 75 members of Congress that are openly communist, meaning they're members of the Democratic Socialists of America, which is a communist entity. They're members of Green Party. They're members of, in some cases, very closely aligned with Communist Party USA and RevCom and Answer and Code Pink. And, you know, Chinese Progressive Association and a committee for a livable world started by the Soviets, by actually an asset of Joseph Stalin's intel chief. So, you know, guys like Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden got their start because of that Council for a Livable World. So, yes, this the Democratic Party, or the Democrat Party, is the leading edge of the U.S. communist movement. And I would say, for people that disagree with that, I would say just go online and read the Democrat platform and then go read the Communist Party objectives. And please tell me where there's a difference.
Right, right. And, you know, sad to say, I don't think the Republican Party is doing much to combat that. And I believe some of them are undercover communists as well. we were warned about this, 60 years ago? And, you know, people still are thinking we're crazy conspiracy nuts. But look at their platform. Look at what they stand for. Look at what they're saying. And then, like you said, look how many we have basically a communist mayor in Los Angeles, Seattle, New York. And you're right. Communism and Islam go hand in hand.
Yeah, let me just say something about the Republicans. When I speak to a lot of local Republican groups around the country, and the last few months has been especially busy, and I try to always address this. I think the greatest threat to the Republicans, the greatest threat to the Republic is the Republican Party, the Republican leadership, the GOP. And the reason I say that is jihadis are doing what I would expect jihadis to do. Communists are doing what communists do. Republicans, who are supposed to be the party of Lincoln, are supposed to be that 100-ton freighter going through the water, defending the founding principles and the declaration through which we understand the U.S. Constitution and the framework for our law and government. And they have not. They are not only not doing their jobs, they're holding the door for the communists and the jihadis for the most part. And the American people, I think, have finally started seeing that. And it's a big part of what the communist movement has done is to create this schism between patriots, people who believe in the founding principles and the rule of law and the Constitution, and the Republican Party, because then people feel as if there's nowhere to go.
Well, and we've always, you know, been presented with only two options, Republican or Democrat. And sadly, that's not getting us anywhere, is it? It's just not working. But let's get back. I do want to get into the situation in Iran. And maybe you can explain this for our folks a little bit better. Iran is a Shiite Muslim nation. Mm-hmm. And Shiite Muslims are often at war with Sunni Muslims. So first of all, what's the difference between those two sects, and how does this ideology affect the citizens of Iran? And also, are the Iranian people currently free, and how are women and minorities treated in Iran? Did you get all that?
I did. That's a lot to cover, but I think I can do it.
All right.
First, Islam is primarily has two main pieces to it. The Sunnis, which makes up over 90% of the Muslim world, and the Shia, which makes up the rest. The Shia are primarily in Iran, Iraq, that's 60 or more percent Shia, Bahrain, and some other places. And the rest of the Muslim world, for the most part, is Sunni. I'll just stick with a couple of the major differences. The Sunni Islamic law states that where there is scholarly consensus, in other words, and most of this was done 1,000 years ago, where there is scholarly consensus, where a unanimous decision was made by the mujtahids, the legal scholars, on a specific point of law, that law becomes a part of sacred Islamic law that can never be changed or annulled, ever. the Shia believe, and I'm making this as simple as I can, they believe, they call the leaders, the scholars, the Ayatollahs, Ayatollah, the verse of Allah, and they believe they can reinterpret certain pieces of the law, which is a capital crime in Sunni Islam. There are also historical and legal, other legal important pieces. Number one, the Sunni believes the caliph, the one man that's the leader of the entire caliphate, comes from the community. The Shia believe that individual has to be a bloodline descendant of the Prophet Muhammad. And these are things that under Sharia, these are capital crimes. In other words, from a Sunni perspective, Shia should be killed, and they do kill them. Now, publicly, the leadership of the Sunni world, not just what I would call military jihadi groups, what the law calls terrorist groups, but movements and U.S. and European-based Islamic organizations have held conferences and signed documents to say we need, for now, to not worry about killing the Shia, and we need to focus on the non-Muslim world, taking Europe, taking the United States, taking Canada, taking these other countries. So this is not what we're talking about here is not secret. You just have to, I would ask our leaders, all you got to do is extract your head from your backside and just listen to what they say and read what their heads of state say and are doing when they're not with you. And it's pretty clear. And that's kind of, so that's the first part of your question. Now, Iran, it's Persia. I mean, these are Persian people historically. And the Muslims took over Iran, and the Persian culture is very strong. And Iran and much of the Iranian people reject Islam, but it's a brutal, oppressive, totalitarian regime because that's what Islam is, because Sharia is barbaric and has no place in civilized society. If you simply open up a seventh grade school book when it teaches about Sharia, that's enough. But when you actually read Sharia that's printed for adults and the language is clear, it's even worse and very barbaric. So how are women and children and non-Muslims treated? Well, of course they're abused. They're enslaved because that's what Sharia does. I mean, women are property in Islam. And Iran teaches women are actually lower than farm animals. You know, they're no different. That Allah makes them, presents them as human, but really their value in Allah's eyes is not that. So I just think most Americans cannot contemplate the barbarity and the evil that is normative mainstream Islamic doctrine. I think the thing that still shocks me is how stupid, naive, and closed-minded most Westerners have become, that they can't even look at plain reality and realize something that our forefathers in Europe and in the West, 1,200 years ago, 1,300 years ago, could easily see and had to deal with.
Well, it's interesting you use that word because in my notes, my next questions, I had to ask, are people really that stupid? It always amazes me how here in America, young people especially are so supportive of Islam, and young white liberal women and the homosexual movement are particularly vocal about their support of Islam. Even though Islam treats women as less than human and homosexuality is a crime punishable by death under Islam, yet American liberals and homosexuals love to support and defend Muslims. You don't see mosques marching in pride parades, but you do see liberals and homosexuals marching and protesting in support of Islam. It's great.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head right there. So it is interesting, and
they've basically overtaken an entire generation.
More than one generation, yeah. So yeah. The communist movement, the ideological subversion in the United States, I think is arguably was complete decades ago, because they controlled the schools first, the universities and colleges, and then the teachers' unions, and then the certainly the media, and it's a long-term chipping away. But it's important at this point in the conversation to remind your audience that one of the key targets of the communist movement is the destruction of critical thinking and reason. So when you can have people speaking to you rationally 1 minute, and then they tell you there are 85 genders and that 2 + 2 could equal 5, you just don't know. Those people are called crazy. Those are lunatics. And we need to stop making excuses for these people who have serious psychological problems. These are crazy people, and they have no business being in positions of authority. So that's the first piece. And I've had these discussions over the years. People try to explain to me, you don't know, 1 + 1 = 2. I just pull a change out of my pocket. I'm like, there's one penny. And right. One penny, how many pennies do we have? It's 2 pennies. Have you heard of the law of gravity? If I take you to the roof of this house and shove you off, you know what happens? 100% of the time, if we do it 1,000 times, 100% of the time, you hit the ground. It's called the law of gravity. It's a universal truth on Earth. And there are more objective truths besides just that. Those are just some. There are two genders. There are male and female. That's a fact. The fact you have doctors doing what they're doing, et cetera. I mean, we could go on a tangent on that. The point is not that those things are being advanced by the communists, but the 3- and 4-star generals have not pushed back against it for fear of losing their jobs. U.S. congressmen and senators, principals of schools, members of chambers of Congress, commerce, pastors, people in the media have all denied it. Some are batting for the other team, right? Some are, they're just cowards. Some are dumb as stumps. When I've had many, many discussions with people, and I've said things like, so you say Islam is fine. It's just a one-off of Christianity. So what Islamic law have you read? None. So where'd you get your understanding of Islam from? And then you let them explain and you realize, well, that's a totally unprofessional standard. Your friend, the Muslim, told you, well, their doctrine obliges them to lie to you.
Right. Right.
So right off the bat, you're unprofessional.
Wow.
This is where we are. So I think it's a combination of generations of ideological subversion. I think Americans on par are dumber today than they were 100 years ago intellectually. I think, and I think that statistics will, certainly bear that out.
And by design.
And by design. That's exactly right.
So, you mentioned cowardice, and I think that's probably the primary reason that so many go along with this, with no objections, because they don't want to be. You see, what we're doing here now, John, is hate speech. And nobody wants to be accused of being a hater. What we're actually doing is telling you the truth. Now, if you want to be offended, but the truth is the truth, as you explained. But I do have a question. Muslims who come to the United States have no intention of assimilating into our culture. It used to be that in order to live, work, and vote here as an immigrant, you had to become a naturalized citizen. You had to study and take a test on our Constitution and pledge allegiance to the nation. But that's not so anymore. Why is this allowed?
Well, I think it's allowed because citizens allow leaders to be in positions of authority at the county, state, and federal level that just don't care. whether it's by, you know, wittingly advancing these hostile actions and efforts and lines of operation, or whether they're just incompetent, or they're just, you know, they just want to go along to get along. Doesn't matter. In any case, they're, you know, these leaders are criminally negligent. But all of this comes down to citizens not holding their elected officials accountable. I mean, I remember the story. They actually made a movie of it, of veterans coming back into their small town of Tennessee, and the sheriff was stuffing the ballot box, and the veterans got together and took up arms and seized the ballot boxes and did an official count and realized the incumbent lost. You know, they put the right guy in office, but they did that under force of arms. That's citizens taking action in real time to hold leaders accountable. And you don't need to take up arms to hold leaders accountable. But how many principals are in schools that need to be grabbed by their ear and tossed out the door and told by the fathers of students that we don't want to see in this building again? You come back again, we're going to whoop you. That needs to happen, and it's not happening. And because people are scared, oh, you can't do that. Well, okay, then stop whining about the fact your community is being overtaken by communists and jihadis. And you're allowing your principals and your city council members and your pastors and your business leaders to allow it. And you're just complaining. You're whining in front of your mirror. Well, that's not how things change. I'm sorry to say.
Well,
we're in a war, and wars aren't won by whining in the mirror.
I agree. And but, you know, we did try to present a redress of grievances at the Capitol on January 6th. And that didn't go so well for a lot of people. So
that's right. This is a war, though.
Yeah.
And I think until we recognize it in wars, there will be battles won and battles lost. I know a lot of those people that were arrested for J6. I know a lot of the people that did long, hard time. And I still work with some of them, many of whom have been exonerated since. And now we know a lot of the truth about January 6th, which is the truth many of us were talking about back in 2020 and 2021. But now finally federal officials are saying it out loud, that the you know, level of criminal activity and treason on behalf of Mr. Obama, Mr. Biden, et cetera. We had a coup. The communists under Mr. Biden had a coup in 2020. And now you've got people like the former DNI, Tulsi Gabbard, said it on national television. We know it now.
Yeah.
I would argue we knew it then. But all the material evidence is on the table for the world to see. And what are we doing about it? Why aren't these people being tried, convicted, and executed for treason? Under a Trump administration, where you would think the most justice would be handed down, nothing's happened. Nothing is happening.
Yeah, that is a very good question. It certainly has had a chilling effect on people trying to even just voice their opinions in their own communities, not even on a national level. But, you know, I know that there are a lot of patriots that would like to come, like to go to Washington, D.C. for the July 4th celebration, but they're afraid. They're afraid there's going to be some sort of a terrorist attack, some sort of a pushback of some sort, some sort of protest that they're going to end up getting involved in that they didn't intend to be. And, you know, quite honestly, it could certainly turn into another J6 situation. I mean, the enemies are within the gates, and they would love nothing better than to destroy more patriots coming to celebrate the 250 years. So anyone in our audience have any questions or comments you want to jump in at this point? This is your chance. There's a little hand button that you need to raise next to your name on the screen. Okay, we're going to move on then. Let's get back to the Iran situation. You know, John, it seems like the globalists are working overtime to keep us all on edge with this. One day we hear a peace deal is signed, the next day attacks continue. Trump keeps saying that if Iran doesn't comply, he's going to annihilate them. The next day we hear the war is over. Are we being gaslighted with all this? Are they just trying to keep us on edge?
Yeah,
I have a hard time even reading the articles anymore, because one day it's war is over. Next day, war's back on. You know, it's crazy.
Right. So I'll just go back to what I said at the beginning. To understand the Islamic understanding of what their defeat mechanism is, Sharia requires Muslims to wage jihad when they have the ability and the resources to do so, which those countries that I mentioned earlier all have the ability and resources to do so, as does a lot of the Muslim world. And so in order to defeat them, they have to feel utterly defeated, that they don't have any ability whatsoever or any resources to wage jihad, and then they must stop, which is why for years, especially in certain countries where the British had their boot on the neck of these Muslim countries, we didn't see this behavior. And as this, crown lifted its heel from the neck of these Muslim countries, and they started building out their army.
They did more than that. They rolled out the red carpet and welcomed him in. And
now they have, yes.
Yes.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I would argue, somebody asked me, what do you think the future of England is? I said, well, the king and he's now the outgoing prime minister, were all in bed with Islam, as are many of the mayors, not only London. The mayors of the key cities are all jihadis. And so I said in 2009 to leaders in England that the UK was finished, because the writing was on the wall back then. But I go back to this. If you, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Pakistan, UAE, Egypt, Iran, and these other nations, they need to feel completely vanquished. And in wars, you don't vanquish, you know, wars are not won by changing policies or creating a piece of legislation or signing an MOU. Wars are won by identifying and vanquishing the enemy. And I can just tell you, not only from my professional experience over the last 30 years, and certainly the last 25 years, but even in the last several years, dealing with the leaders in government, they don't have any real understanding of the perspective of these Islamic countries or the Muslim community. It's ridiculous. And so because we don't, we then work with individuals and organizations that are hostile. Because of that, you've got the advisor to President Clinton for 8 years, Abdurrahman Alamoudi, was in Al-Qaeda, the largest Al-Qaeda fundraiser in North America. You have under the Biden administration, the director of intelligence for the National Security Council, Meher Bitar, Hamas. Under the Trump administration, to his most recent inauguration, he invites Imam Husseini, who's a Hezbollah guy, and has Hamas and convicted terrorists inside the U.S. Commission on Religious Liberty. I mean, it's insanity, but this is what happens when you decide we don't need to vet people. We run this like however we're going to run it, but we don't take the enemy seriously. And I want to be clear, because I know there are a lot of people out that watch your show that love Mr. Trump. I think Mr. Trump has done a great deal that is very good for America, a great deal. And I believe, based on watching what he's said and done since the 80s, his message has been consistent for over 40 years. So I think he's a patriot, but I think he is, well, I don't think, he has people around him that are bad guys, that are working for hostile foreign powers and working for organizations here in the United States that are hostile. And because the U.S. has no viable counterintelligence apparatus, we are getting our clock cleans, just clock cleaned, because that's primarily what the bad guys are doing. It's all about espionage, counterintelligence, controlling the message, directing our foreign policy, directing our counter domestic counterterrorism strategy, and that's why it's incoherent.
Do you really think these leaders don't know?
I mean,
people like me. I
can't say names, but I have briefed people. During the first Trump administration, briefed people one-on-one, or one of that, you know, senior leader, me and one or two of my colleagues, and just laid it all out. And they have literally said, holy crap, I didn't know that. And I can tell you the boss, Mr. Trump, doesn't know that. And all efforts to try to get that information to him were blocked very aggressively. So that's the problem. When you've got people like Seb Gorka advising you, that tells me you're not serious. You don't actually want to know the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who says 99.9% of Muslims don't agree with Al-Qaeda. That's just factually not true.
Right.
That's just one example. I mean, we could go through the whole litany of these things, but.
Nancy has a comment or a question. Come on in, Nancy. Oh, you have to unmute yourself.
I have a question too and a comment.
Okay.
I'm talking
about it. Oh, we're having a hard time hearing you.
This is Jill. I have a comment and some questions.
Okay.
Do you hear me?
Yep. You're coming through
okay.
Well.
All right. So the question up top is, who is behind the communist movement in this country? And I would like to say, in my opinion, it is the Khazarian Zionists. And I recently saw online where Qatar was stating that Bibi Netanyahu was asking Qatar to funnel $35 million a month to him. This is USD money, so that he could feed, arm, and house Hamas. And this has been going on since 2018. So I believe that Bibi Netanyahu is one of these Khazarian Zionists. These are descended from the Bolsheviks who overthrew Christian Russia. And they have been doing the same thing for over 100 years, right down to this very day in our country. And I'd also like to say, most American Christians don't know the Constitution. They don't understand that our Constitution is based on the first five books of the Bible. The Ten Commandments is a summation of those five books. And if they knew the commandments of God, God tells us very clearly in the book of Deuteronomy that we are not to put people into positions of leadership over us who do not worship the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Unfortunately, because we don't know these commandments, we don't know our Constitution, this is why we see people like Kamala Harris. And she doesn't qualify according to our Constitution because at the time of her birth, both of her parents were foreign nationals at the time of her birth in California. The same is true with Vivek Ramaswamy. The time of his birth in Ohio, both of his parents were foreign nationals. He's a Hindu, so is Kamala Harris. We have no business, according to the commandments of our God, putting people like this, Hindus and Muslims and people who do not recognize him as the creator and the God of our country. So I'd like to hear what you have to say as to who is behind communism, which has taken over our elections for over 100 years at this point. Who do you say is behind communism in this country? And by the way, the Khazarian Zionists believe, as do the Muslims, that anybody outside of their community are going, they are animals. And So who do you think is behind communism?
John?
Okay, so there's quite a bit there to unpack. Let me be succinct. In the United States, the primary driver of the communist movement, which used to be the Soviet Union until its collapse, and I'll put collapse in quotation marks, it's the Chinese. The primary driver is the Chinese Progressive Association, Asian for Black Lives, Black Lives Matter, which is not an insignificant group, which was formed out of the largest Chinese communist group in the United States, Liberation Road, which broke off, and now it's Freedom Road, Socialist Organization Liberation Road. They're the primary drivers, they're the primary financiers, but then you've got European communists as well pushing these lines of operation as well, which that money and those operations are not insignificant. With regards to Bibi Netanyahu, I would just caution you, anything that comes out of Qatar officially is not true, especially when it comes to Israel. So you seem like a very rational person. I'm a little surprised that you would quote Qatar in that. Qatar is one of the three leading terrorist state sponsors of the global Islamic movement, and specifically as relates to the United States, a strong argument could be made they're number one. Now, I want to make a brief comment on what you said about most Americans do not understand our founding principles in the Constitution. I strongly agree with that. My experience is going around the country every time I train, depending on the length of the training, I always include some piece of our founding principles to at least summarize it in, 3 to 5 minutes if I'm only talking for 45 minutes. And if I'm doing a 1 or 2 day training, then it'll be an hour or two, session on the founding principles. And I think a couple things, and I will say what you're saying is true, and I'll give you one anecdote that I found is true across the United States. You know, being in South Carolina in a church with over 400 people, and I asked, raise your hand if you consider yourself a patriot. It appeared that everyone raised their hands. And raise your hand if you consider yourself a Christian. And it appeared that almost everyone raised their hands. And then I asked them, did you know this? Did you know this? And did you know this about the founding of the United States and the principles which undergird our long government? And nobody raised their hands. So the understanding, like, for instance, the fact that every state constitution required a public proclamation of Christian faith and a belief in the Old and New Testament as inspired by God and a belief in the Trinity to hold public office. Nobody knew that. And so I think one of the greatest detriments to our republic, and again, I've said this before, and Jill, I'll kind of end here. I don't think the threat is that we don't understand communism and Islam and, secular humanism and the Satanist movement and everything else, globalism. It's that we don't understand who we are. And that's the most dangerous of all. The Constitution cannot be understood without looking through the lens of the Declaration, which said our rights come from our Creator, which is the God of the Old and New Testament. Mm-hmm. And that those rights are inherent in mankind, all humans, and that no law, no government, no man can take them from us. And out of that understanding, we never surrender our inherent right to self-government, but we allow others to represent us so long as they rule justly according to those founding principles found in the first sentence of the Declaration. The law of nature and the law of nature's God, legally defined at the time of the founding in Blackstone's commentaries as the will of God as he expresses himself in his creation and Holy Scripture.
Well,
that's the moral standard for the constitutional republic.
Okay. Yeah. I do want to get Nancy in here too before we run out of time, but John, we have four Muslim members of U.S. Congress. Muslim governors, cabinet members, state legislators, mayors, city council members, judges, county officials, school board members, and this is nationwide. Even New York City has a Muslim mayor. How can this be when they cannot swear an oath on the Bible or an allegiance to the U.S. or our Constitution?
Because citizens allow it.
Huh?
Citizens allow it. If citizens did their duty, this wouldn't be going on. We have a duty to ensure our leaders rule according to what I just said.
Yeah.
Founding principles. They have not. And in so many ways, which we could spend a whole nother hour or two just talk about the ways in which they have violated. We allow them, our social compact with the people we elect is that so long as they rule justly according to those founding principles, they can remain in office and represent us. When they don't, we remove them.
Yeah, that's but the, almost none of them do.
Right, right. So we, the people, are the government. We are failing. And this is why, 20 years ago in the FBI, when I was trying to get leaders to understand, if you continue to allow the adversary to gain ground, eventually you will leave the American people with no option but violence. And we're just about there.
Yeah.
Because our leaders under a Trump administration, I mean, we have thousands of Muslim Brotherhood organizations in the United States. Mr. Trump told us 10 years ago he's going to designate them terrorists. He didn't. Now they're in his administration, not doing anything about it. The leading Muslim Brotherhood nation, Qatar, he calls our friends. He's letting them build a participate in military training in U.S. bases. I mean, this is, and Americans are okay with it because it's Mr. Trump and everything he does is awesome. And so until the American people, this is why, by the way, the training I do, like I still talk to people at the national level when they ask, but 90% of my time is spent training local communities, city and county council members, sheriff's departments, police, citizens about these threats. So at the county level, they can identify and flush these enemies of liberty out of their community lawfully before it goes violent, which it's going to have to go if things keep going the direction they're going. And the states and the federal government are not doing anything effective to actually put their finger on the bad guys.
Absolutely. Okay, Nancy.
Just a quick question. You talked about Trump is not being informed. Who is it that's holding back? Because whenever I see any photos of Trump in the Oval Office, he's surrounded by people who are, which I considered to be righteous people, but I don't know who's in the background. So you would have a better say on that, but people are actually not allowing him to get the information he needs. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's a part of it. I mean, when you just look at, I rarely listen to what people at that level say, just watch what they do. Okay. And when you bring an Al-Qaeda guy who tortured and killed US Marines and soldiers into the White House and call him a good guy, it's not just that you did that and every patriot and veteran that was in combat looks at that and loses respect for Mr. Trump. It's that what's the message going to the Muslim world? And the message to the Muslim world is Trump is our guy. And if you don't know it, the leadership of the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood calls Trump their guy for reasons just like that. So he can say and do what he wants. But if you don't understand how the Muslim world is receiving these things, we can go name by name by the people in his administration. I would just ask who in his administration in the last 10 years, the first administration and this one, has actually articulated what the threat is to the United States. Nobody. They'll say things like these woke things or these radicals. You got the vice president on Joe Rogan who says, you know, there are Islamists and there are Muslims and, you know, Islamists are like theocrats. I mean, that's incoherent. That's as dumb as a cinder block. That tells me he knows nothing. More importantly, it doesn't matter about me. What's it tell the leadership of Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Pakistan, Muslim Brotherhood? Clueless. The U.S. government is clueless. And then the other day he says, we love Pakistan, one of the leading nations in the global Islamic jihad. I mean, what's the message that they're projecting, not to us, it's bad enough they're projecting that to us. They're projecting to the Muslim world, America is surrendering. So what guides them? Sharia. When someone surrenders to you, what are you required to do? You're under Sharia, you're required to fight them more brutally, more aggressively. So we are literally, whether Mr. Trump understands he's doing this or not, and I do not believe he does get this, he's literally inviting them to be much more brutal, which quite frankly is why they're becoming so open on the streets of America. Like Rob said at the beginning, they're literally on videos like, yeah, we're here to impose Sharia. We're taking over the U.S. because they believe everything we're doing is surrendering to them, from the president down to local communities.
Okay. We're down to about 4 minutes here, but I got to ask you about Pakistan.
Okay.
Why did we choose Pakistan to moderate this peace deal with Iran? And this memorandum of understanding offered to Iran, according to what I've read, it includes billions of dollars for Iran, money to rebuild what we destroyed there, and no guarantee from Iran that they're going to allow anyone to oversee their nuclear programs.
Yeah, we chose Pakistan because two reasons. One, again, I want to say again, our leaders are clearly incompetent. Two, the ISI, Pakistani intelligence, has been running a massive intelligence operation targeting the Trump campaign. And they're using organizations like PAC-PAC, the Pakistani Political Action Committee, and others to run bad guys into the Trump administration. And they're using people that are believed by Mr. Trump to be good guys that they've over time allied themselves with to walk them in the White House. This is how it works. This is much more espionage and counterintelligence. And when someone you trust brings in some other guy and you let him in the door, that's it. They have the keys to the candy store and in they go. And this is why our foreign policy and this MOU with Iran and our domestic counterterrorism strategy is incoherent. Because when you ask jihadis to help you defeat jihadis, you will only always lose. And that's what's going on.
Okay. In the last minute or so, John, tell us how people can get you to come to their community and do a teaching session.
Well, a couple things. One, johnguandolo.com is my website. You can reach out to me there. A lot of resources. I mean, I've got my books. I've got an entire video presentation on It's All About Sharia in the shop, and a lot of free resources as well. But the key trainings we have is the Into Action, the 1 to 2 day program for citizens to teach you about the threats and how to deal with them in your local community. The 3 day law enforcement program that's actually for military, National Guard, first responders. And that's called Understanding and Investigating Hostile Networks. We have a train the trainer program to teach people how to teach this. I would also say, for those of you not aware, on July 4th, the film Remember the Alamo, Don't Sharia My Texas, is coming out. I was in the movie, but so were a lot of other great people. Tommy Robinson, Mike Flynn, Laura Logan, Doc Chambers, John Bennett, Matt Shea, a lot of other people, great people in that movie. That's about ridding, defending liberty. And we're calling on patriots to come and fight here in Texas against the Islamic movement here. But also, it's a movie about here's what's going on and here's how you win. So I would encourage people to, we're actually doing on June 28th, this Sunday, a premiere in Dallas. But that's how people can reach me. I'm on X at J, the initial J, Guandolo. And then some numbers. Find me on X and follow me there too.
Okay. So it's johnguandolo.com and get his contact information there. John, thank you for being here. I'm afraid we are out of time and I still have 3 pages we didn't get to. So, but that's a good problem to have, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, okay. Thank you. And folks, we'll see you again next week. I'm going to have Pastor Butch Paugh from Call to Decision Ministries. I know he's one of your favorites, and so you're not going to want to miss next week. Share this program, and we will see you then. God bless.
Thank you.